Thank you very much for the suggestions for world work, either during the class or after the class or when we return home. I look at all of them later today, and by tonight we'll probably put some of them to work. We received another letter yesterday from Germany, and it's from a class of 21 Infinite Way students in Munich. And one of them wrote and wanted this class sent to them for study in Munich. And something else happened I thought was noteworthy, and it made me smile, of course, because we received a bouquet of flowers with a little note in it, and it said, from Joel. So somebody was reminded of Joel in some way and decided to express that feeling. And it adds a little aura to the work we're doing here because, as you know, the teaching of Joel is what we consider the hope of this world at this point. There have been many revelators on this earth, great names in the public eye, each adding divine truth to the world understanding. There have been founders of religions, names that are considered immortal today. There have been patriarchs and prophets standing up in the public forums and berating their people, telling them that they were going in the wrong direction. There have been miracle healers. There has been Jesus Christ. And today, as we think of the competition between nations, the suspicion between nations, the immense amounts of capital that is spent to defend and to attack in the case of needed defense. In light of what the world is today, we say, has the message of the revelators failed? Is it leavening the lump? What if it hadn't even been here? Considering the nature of the world today, would we still be in even darker ages than we are? Where is the fruition of the message of Jesus Christ? How can a woman in San Francisco go to church on Sunday morning and then in the evening say, I cannot walk the streets safely, so I'm staying home, and still feel that the message of Jesus Christ has entered her consciousness? How can people be mugged all over the world, even in Washington, D.C., where we have a President of the United States? How can president after president either be assassinated or the recipient of an attempt by an individual who must have been exposed at one time in his life or other to the words of Jesus Christ? Where is the power? I think we must find out why the message appears not to have penetrated the human mind and the human consciousness. We cannot just decide that it hasn't, but someday it will. We cannot live in that hope. I think Joel wrestled a great deal with this question. It was in either 1972 or 1973. after many years of seeing that even among his own students, there was a tendency to settle for less than Christ consciousness, a tendency to be satisfied if the lumps and bumps went away. And although he had once said his teaching was not absolute, gradually, as he neared his own transition, it became more and more absolute, as if spirit through him was determined that truth should not be veiled, that the consciousness of man had been leavened sufficiently for truth to be put out there naked for people to stare at and understand it. When in the book Beyond Words and Thoughts, he wrote the chapter Incorporeality, he was making his teaching almost absolute. He was not going to let the Christ message hide under a bushel. Some of us have read Incorporeality many times and heard it many times and thought about it many times. The word commitment looms very large at this point in our work. We are either going to tread water or we are going to swim out into the deep. You tread water by not making your commitment. You swim out into the deep by making the commitment, and the commitment is very specific. I don't know any students who work with me and I with them who do not make a commitment. Because when they do not, they have to drop out of the work. There's no way for them to stay. The absolute level of the teaching that Joel began before his transition is what we are pursuing as diligently as Spirit permits. And the commitment that must be made is spelled out for us very carefully in the chapter Incorporeality, and in the other chapter that you were asked to study before the seminar, the chapter that was spoken by Joel in the month of April, 17 years ago, 2 months before his own transition. There he spelled it out, so even the most cautious, comfort-loving student could not say, "Yes, I agree with it," and then turn away. No one has read that chapter who was not affected deeply. And we want to be sure that no one has read it who does not make the commitment that the chapter calls for. Because we're going to swim out into that deep water, and we must prepare right now. You can measure your commitment by your acceptance, not of the words, but by the way you live your daily life. That is your acceptance. We can all nod in agreement. That is not acceptance. That is not commitment. And I don't think there's any more need be said on it, but let's look at what he said and measure our own commitment and perhaps reinforce it once more. This is from Incorporeality. It is not absolute. It's very close. Each of us is, in part, a physical being. Each of us is a mental being. And each of us is an incorporeal being. Now that is not absolute. And it is a place where it is very easy for an individual to stop and say, well, I'm physical, I'm mental, and I'm incorporeal. But that was in 1972 or 1973. Even before that, Joel had made other statements that were slightly different than this, which gave us no room to stand by and accept ourselves as a three-part being composed of physical form, a mental brain, and a spiritual incorporeal body. But at this point, he made this statement presumably because of the quality of the consciousness of his own audience. He was not at this point shocking anyone. And so everybody felt included there, because everyone could say, well, that's me. I have a physical body, and I have a brain, and I have a spiritual body. That's me. Now wait until he gives you the shocker that follows. But the reality of us is that incorporeal, spiritual selfhood, which is born of God. Now, if you analyze it carefully, each of us is in part a physical being, a mental being, and an incorporeal, spiritual being, but the reality of us is the incorporeal, spiritual being. Therefore, what is the physical being and the mental being if the reality of us is the incorporeal? And so in this left-handed manner, he has told us that the physical sense of life and the mental sense of life is unreal. And of course, anyone intensely desiring to live in reality would have said, then if that's the only reality of me, I'm going to live there and out of that. And that would have been the end of the physical and mental idea of life for that individual, no matter what the struggle. If that individual wanted to make the commitment. When do you make that commitment? That was 17 years ago. We are physical being, we are mental being, and we are incorporeal spiritual being, and the only reality of us is incorporeal spiritual being. Is that not a demand for commitment? And therefore, if I am going to say that I am a student of the infinite way, I must say that I am incorporeal spiritual being. And then I must commit myself to living that way and dying to physical being and mental being. You cannot be what you are not and also be what you are. You can't be 50% or 33 1/3% divine. Unless you want 33 1/3% or less of the qualities of divinity. And 33 1/3% of you can't escape into reality tomorrow as long as you've got 66 2/3% of you still around. That's the commitment we're being asked to make. Frankly, if it's not the commitment you intend to make, the infinite way and you are strangers, and you should know it. I feel blessed in knowing that we have all in our way made the commitment, and all that remains is how to strengthen that commitment, how to deepen it, how to clarify it. It's very easy to read the motive in our hearts is not only to commit to the truth, but to convert our lives to that truth. And perhaps we may not know why we do not, but Joel knew, and he was going to tell us. The other part of us is that creation described in the second and third chapters of Genesis, which was made not by God. Heart, lung, liver, brain, blood vessels, cells, not made by God. Oh, I'm sure 60,000 students have not all accepted that, or even read it, though reading it. But the other part of us is that which is not the creation of God, but is shown in the second and third chapters of Genesis. It is the creation of mind, the mind of man, by what is called the Lord God. Now, that's not exactly a statement that hits all people between the eyes, because it doesn't come right out and say, you are not a human being. There is no human being. Human beings are not the creation of God. But there's no one can read this without reaching that conclusion, unless they really don't want to. Well, he has just banished our physical bodies. He is saying here that the human being is not the creation of God. And if you insist that you are the creation of God, but you accept the teaching of Joel, then you must say that I cannot be a human being and be the creation of God. I must make a commitment in the direction of one or the other. Now, if you're not a human being, there's only one thing left for you to be. That which God created is divine. And so, if you commit yourself to being a divine being, you must commit yourself to the qualities of divinity. And it's easy to make a token acceptance by saying, I am a divine being, but I must first live out my humanhood. Or I am a divine being, but I will inherit those qualities later. Or those qualities are latent, and I will develop them slowly and carefully. There are many ways to hedge the real commitment. And none of us have to look very far to recognize where there are individuals who have hedged every single day of their lives while pretending to themselves that they were following this teaching. And our teacher well knew this. When you are living out from incorporeality, says Joel, you have attained the mystical consciousness. Now, he was not content to leave all this at this point. He was not content to walk off this surface of the earth at this point at all. He had not yet sung the full song he was here to sing. But it did come that next April, 2 months before transition. And it is the chapter no end. And it is as absolute as you can get. Because it is pure Christ truth. And we who have accepted it and are working to live it out are on the path of Christ consciousness. Let's look at it together. Let's be sure that the words of Joel fall upon ears that are willing to listen. Starting page 59, and I won't specify every page because they run all through the chapter, and I may go back a page and come forth and go back, so it'll just get too confusing, and you don't have to take notes about the pages because they all start at page 59 in the realization of oneness. You either have the book or you can purchase the book from Betty St. George and June Blake outside, or you have the letter of that year, which was April of 1964. I can't believe it. 1964. Wow. Just a day ago, it seems that Joel said to me, well, there's nothing more now. Just another cup of coffee and another piece of pie. He never said much to me, but I remember that. And he'd already written this chapter, and I put them together. He had said it. He had done it. He hadn't even yet received the inner purple robe in consciousness when he said that. Now see if we have committed to our teacher's teaching. And then you'll see why the Christ message on this earth has not yet brought mankind to the threshold of heaven on earth. But through the Christ teaching to which Joel committed himself and to which his teachers committed themselves, we are sitting here. I know the various teachings that you have been in, and they have brought you to the point where you have as solid a foundation in truth as there is on this earth. You are that ground which can produce Christ consciousness on this earth. And transform the idiocies of this world into divine government. And transform this world right out of existence into the earth that is the Lord's. And it may be that the few words on this paper in front of me are the missing keys to that Christ consciousness that we are here to exemplify. Remember the title, No And. There is no person. There is no self other than God. Period. Will we be talking to God for the rest of this day and the rest of our lives? That's what he's putting before us. There is no person. There is only God. And then, as if he were here, he says, there is no self other than God in this room or in any other room. Let that penetrate our consciousness. Let the sleeping human mind rest. Let the words fall onto fertile soil. In this room, only God is. And remember, there is no God and. Do not be frightened by the enormity of that truth. In this room and any other room, only God is. There is no other self. Does that mean you are to spiritualize the human body and call it God? What are you going to do with it if it isn't there? Why not use it to glorify God? Why not let that be its purpose? Let that which you called your human body glorify your divine self. Let it be a visible expression to the world of the invisible presence of God everywhere. And therefore, what it does becomes significant. Obviously, the hand will move a certain way. Things it will do and things it won't do. The face will express certain attitudes, and there are certain attitudes it won't express. The moment you become conscious that you are out of form is the mirror of your inner consciousness. When the outer form is not expressing God, then the inner consciousness is not expressing God. If the outer form is not expressing supply, the inner consciousness is not expressing supply. And why? Because there is no commitment to the truth that there is no other self than God. The adjustment is made in that consciousness. It's not the same as sitting down and closing your eyes and waiting for divine dispensation. That's not the same as the commitment to the one self that I am. The commitment precedes the meditation. The meditation without the commitment is not even a meditation. It's a mental exercise. Without the commitment of selfhood, you're starting a meditation in duality. And for those of you who have found that meditation was not very fruitful, let alone just difficult at times, make your commitment to this simple truth, which is the vastest truth on the earth, that in all this universe in all the universes that science will discover, in the various suns and moons and satellites and galaxies. All that exists is the one self that is God. And there is no other self. Now, God is not a galaxy. God is not a constellation. God is not a planet. God is not a human body cell. There is only God. No end. What are we looking at when we gaze at through the periscope and through the microscope and through the stethoscope? What are we measuring when we take a cardiogram? What does the X-ray perceive in you? Do you see that the mind universe, the material mental universe, and God are not one and the same? They are not interchangeable. God is not infusing the mental material universe. God is not part of it. God is not in it. There is only the self called God and none other. God is not sharing a single inch of space with anything else. God is not sharing space with your body. When you say, "Yes, I understand," does it follow then that because you understand, you are willing to sell every mental concept you possess that denies that truth and stand on the one single truth that here is the self of God, regardless of what the world may see? And there is the self of God, regardless of what I may see. And that is only the beginning of commitment. But that is the thread, the yarn that you weave in your consciousness, day by day, as you weave the fabric of oneness. Without second. Without second selves, without second bodies, without second minds, you cleave to the one, and that is sowing to the one. Every one of us has multitudinous opportunities to do this daily. And the commitment involves actually doing it, making it a point to identify the presence of God as the only presence. Regardless of the nature of the pressures you're under, or the confusions, or the schedules you're running in, the trains you're missing, the appointments that you're late for, the recognition within that only God is present changes those schedules, adjusts those appointments, fits what cannot be fitted into an area that accommodates them. Time is lengthened to accommodate the realization that God is all. Space is adjusted. The mountain is moved. but not by human methods. Go absolute. At this point, you must go absolute. Only the presence of God is here. That means at the switchboard in the hotel, when the maid comes to your room later at the wrong time, when someone from the other room decides to call someone four rooms away, and when the smoke flows out from the cigarette smokers that you'd rather not be with in the restaurant or wherever you happen to be. Always re-identify. And in your re-identification, lo and behold, I come quickly. The fire will be put out. The smoke will evaporate. Even the smoker will evaporate. The Roman Empire will exterminate itself. But only in this absolute acceptance that God alone is here, there is no other. So there's no one obnoxious. There's no deadly poison. There's only God's self here. And that is the first step. That is the beginning of truth. Violate it, and all that follows will be what you see in the world today. That is number one why the Christ message has not permeated the consciousness of man. Man in his hypnosis even could not see the Christ when it appeared in the form of Jesus Christ. It could not see the Christ in the form of Abraham or Moses or Isaiah. It could not see the Christ in the form of Mohammed or Buddha. And name all the revelators you can. Man could not see the Christ. Man saw the person. Man saw a holy man. And then looked around at all the rest of the primitive savages and said, "He's the Holy One, follow him." And it had God here as this holy man, or sent from God, and over there, all these heathens. But over there was God too, and over there, and everywhere, even where children are starving in Africa, or in some parts of our own country, only God is. In your consciousness that there is only the one self, you do not accept starving children in Africa. You do not accept terror in the Middle East. Now there's a difference then between what you accept and what the world accepts, and that's your commitment. If you can be moved out of that commitment into the world belief that there is God and, you're not following Joel at all. And this is what he gave us before departing the visible scene. He left it for those who have found some degree of Christhood already and know that the rest of the journey is going to be a difficult and a beautiful one, and who know that the path to the crown of glory will be covered with many thorns, all of which we accept as blessings. The narrow path that few find, we are finding we shake hands and we communicate soul to soul, we know that we are moving together in that direction. And when we shake hands and do not see that in each other's soul, it's time for one of us to say to the other, let us sit down and chat a moment until we can come to some inner oneness with each other about the nature of truth. Because often we find that those who are sincere and dedicated somehow fall into the sleep. And often it doesn't take very much to awaken them, just caring enough. And when Jesus said to forgive 70 times 7, he was reminding us that someday we would need someone to forgive us 70 times 7 too. We all fall into the sleep to varying degrees and varying frequencies. And we all need each other to jostle us along the way, anytime, to open an inner eye to a truth that is the core of transition. God is the only self. And without that key, we do not have the keys to the kingdom. I've got to assume from this point then that everyone within our visible presence knows, number one, that God is the only self and is present in order to establish that truth in consciousness and to let it grow and permeate the entire consciousness into the fullness of God, understood and lived in, not just where my form is, but where your form is, where the form of the world is, where the ant and the beetle are, where the lion and the tiger are, where the mongoloid and the retarded are, where the hungry and the forlorn are, where the oppressed victims are, and where the oppressor is. The tyrant and the victim must both be unseen in their visible state through your Christ consciousness. For the knowledge that God stands there is Christ consciousness. For God is the activity of Christ individualizing as the one self wherever your eye wave may fall. At the other end of our space shuttle, Christ is. God is the only self. That's only the beginning of Joel's bestowal of love upon us, that truth. Yet it is possible, in spite of the foregoing, to hypnotize you into believing that there is a selfhood other than God. In any place where you happen to be, you can learn that here and decide to commit yourself to it here and walk right through that door at the end of this class and complain about something. I know I can. So right now, make a mental note. And I'm going to try to remind you about it before the class is over. When you leave this class, when you go through the door, when you're right in the threshold, within yourself should be ringing this one truth. Only God is. The only self there is no other. Will you try to do that on the way out of this class later? Take it with you. I'm going to try to remember it myself 5 times at least, so that when we move out of this class, we're not in a different consciousness. We don't want to leave God in this room. And you'll find God on the highway. You'll find God on Amtrak. You'll find God in the friendly skies. If God is in your heart, without opposite. If we're dwelling upon this, it's because it's time to do just that. Because in 1 second, says Joel, you can be hypnotized into the belief that people are here. So we're going to be still with that, still another moment or two or three. As it solidifies, you can move it over your entire past lifespan. Just move the knowledge across all of it and see how perfect it could have been had we lived in that knowledge that only God is here. Had we been born under that consciousness, only God is here. There is no second. Had we carried it with us, the Christ teaching would have been on earth, alive, functioning visibly. So, in a sense, we are a new generation, a regeneration Our souls are at work regenerating, opening the doorway to reality, jostling us and saying, wake up out of this mortal dream, my friend. Wake up, wake up. Since time began, there has never been a single death in the kingdom of God. Well, that's a quick jump from only God is here, but I skipped a few things in Joel's page there because every word in it lends to another meditation, and we have to sort of select as we go. Now, if only God is here, you see how death has to be one of the great illusions. If only the self of God is here, death must be a universal illusion. And you can throw in sin and disease with it. And that is why Joel can say in truth that there has never been a death in reality. And when he says there has never been a death in the kingdom of God, he's saying in reality. Because the kingdom of God is the only reality. Now, does that mean that we can commit ourselves to no death? Do we have that capacity? Can you be that self which can never die? Can you know another self that can? Can you fear that which can never happen in yourself? Do you see how grief and sympathy, though so seemingly human, is a denial that only God is the self? How hard-hearted we seem at times when we are willing to commit to this truth that there is no death, and therefore there's nothing to grieve about. Lazarus has not died. Oh, but we can't prove it the way he did, can we? We can only say it. Don't be too sure of that, because you yourself can prove it. When the Spirit of God moves through your consciousness, raising the dead, you will know the life that is ever present. Then you will know from within that there has never and never can be a death. Because when you are conscious of the one infinite self without opposite, you will also be conscious of the one infinite life without opposite. Somewhere else, Joel said, and it was the very thing we meditated on last night. You have always been alive. You may have left a husband or a wife 400 years ago somewhere, and they grieved over you. But here you are. They just didn't know that the self hadn't died, because they were not in the self. And for some of us, there'll be new bodies, new mates. And it will be for those who have not learned that the only self present is God. We will die to an image, but we will not die to our life and to ourself. And if we have the capacity to love God supremely from the heart, from the soul, we will forsake the temptation to believe that we can lose a loved one. We do not lose a loved one. The life always remains, the self always remains, separation never exists, except in the hypnotized consciousness which believes there is God, self, God, life, and something else. That is a human luxury we can no longer afford. You are one now with all who have ever walked this earth and ever will. It may be a temporary inconvenience for some that they do not have that visible companion, or a future inconvenience for some of us. But that's why we're in this message, to eliminate the falsities of the sleeping consciousness which does not know the One. That's what it has guided all of us into. A truth message. To live out of incorporeality, says Joel, is the mystical consciousness. And because Joel could never say what he had not attained, we know that he walked in the mystical consciousness, living out of incorporeality, living in the knowledge of one infinite divine self. And so grieve not for Joel, grieve for no one, for that one is present now as the one self, and I might add, right where we are. Of course, if we maintain a mental image of someone and then think we're consciously aware of the one self, the mental image will continue to tempt us into the belief that there is another self. You must restore each individual to their reality of incorporeal self, and then you'll see the futility and the unreality of the feelings we nurture about ones who have or will depart. There's no departing. It simply isn't true. Now, as there is only one self, there is only one body. It may individualize to appearances as many, but if you're fooled by one self, you'll be fooled by many bodies. If you have many selves, you're going to have to accept many bodies. But you cannot say, I accept one self, and then turn around and I accept many bodies. You see, the consciousness that stands behind the mind, above the mind, unaffected, uninfluenced by the mind, automatically vetoes the appearances of the mind which sees many bodies. And without effort, without even taking thought, accepts the one present where many appear to be. It's just as true of 400 head of cattle as it is for 400 people. The one invisible self is the only presence appearing to our human consciousness as the multiplicity of different forms. There is no God and